I hope that people are willing to invite me into their classrooms, invite me into the schools to be part of the school. I do know that I have a role, of course, as leader of the district. I do know the responsibilities that go with that. But I also know that there's a responsibility to understand truly what's going on in the classroom, even from the level of the superintendency.
Hi, and welcome to the Lunchtime Leaders Podcast. Today we will be interviewing Dr. Salvatore Menzo, future superintendent of Wallingford School Systems and current superintendent of Marlboro School Systems, where their vision is to inspire wonder and awe and curiosity and to motivate young minds to the future. So, I hear you had a rough childhood, Yankee fan?
I'm a major Yankee fan. I didn't have a rough childhood. Actually, I had a very successful childhood being a Yankee fan in Connecticut.
So, tell us about your accomplishment you're most proud of for your career.
My most proud career accomplishment probably happened about a year ago, which was receiving my doctorate from the University of Connecticut after many years of hard work. Actually, I did the doctorate relatively quickly in about 4 years, which traditionally it's about anywhere from 7 to 9 years to complete a doctorate. But I was very motivated to complete it, and it was a passion of mine to complete and really receive the doctorate not only for myself but also for my family. My family is very important to me, and actually my grandmother, who is no longer with us, really wanted me to receive my doctorate, and I know I made her proud by doing so.
That's nice. What skills and ability do you feel like students need to have to be successful in the 21st century?
Actually, the skills that you're demonstrating today, which is the use of technology. Technology is going to be very important in the 21st century and beyond. I believe also the skills that you need are creative problem-solving skills, creative thinking skills. Factual knowledge is important. It's very important for you to know information, but how to apply that information is just as important, if not more important, in today's society, and also the ability to communicate and work with other countries around the world. Our world, as we all know, is becoming smaller by the moment, and we're all connected in many, many ways. So those skills are essential to being successful in the future.
Do you believe like that we should have computers and all types of like different programs and things, different ways like to communicate in schools?
I do. I think that technology, you have to be careful. Technology can't take over education. It has to be used to facilitate education. It can't be your source of all your data and all your information. You still need teachers. We still need textbooks because you need to still be able to access information from a variety of resources. But technology needs to be something that you're very comfortable with, you're familiar with, you can utilize in many different ways. So there are many different technologies. It's not just a computer. It's utilizing a variety of different technologies in the area of information gathering and information reviewing and making sure that the information you do receive on the internet, for example, is appropriate, accurate, and actually meaningful to your research or your day-to-day life.
What do you see as the role of the Library Media Center in middle schools?
The Library Media Center in a middle school and in all schools needs to be a hub for communication, a hub for finding information, sharing information, learning how to acquire information. The Library Media Center should be not only have text or print materials, such as magazines, periodicals, textbooks, research books, nonfiction, fiction, but also it should have and gradually become more connected to the technology world. Some media centers have moved in that direction. Some media centers are beginning to move in that direction, integrating the technology within the Library Media Center.
Okay. What are your thoughts regarding how much we should focus on the content of knowledge versus focusing on the student's ability to learn and adapt and grow?
I think there needs to be a balance. I think you need knowledge in order to be able to learn and grow. But I think that just to make environments or students rather in environment in an educational environment just regurgitate information and just spit out facts, that's not going to best suit students for the future. I've been very fortunate to travel to China over the past 2 years, and their education system, which has traditionally been an environment where students just learned a lot of information and just spit it out on an exam, that's shifted. It's actually shifted to more of what we're doing in the United States, which is trying to have students apply the knowledge that they learn to real-world problems and critical thinking and creative thinking problem-solving skills.
I heard you say you were in China, and you did a collaborative project with them. Can you tell us like a lot more about them?
Sure. 2 years ago, I was fortunate enough to be invited to go visit China. We went to Beijing, and then from Beijing, we traveled to Jinan, the province of Jinan, and we visited our sister school. It was a primary school, an elementary school, K-6 school, at which time I was allowed to visit different classrooms, learn about different curricular activities that they were doing. I was very interested in how they taught science, how they taught math, because traditionally, Asian cultures have always outscored our students in the United States in the area of math and science. So I was very interested to get that information. When I came back to the United States, working with the staff in the district that I'm in presently and the administrators, we set up a variety of different communication activities through pen pal relationships. We have an art exchange where we send art projects back and forth to China. This past fall, I was invited back again to China to not only visit our sister school, but also do presentations for their principals on what we do in the United States. So I met with their principals over the course of the 2 weeks that I was there and shared with them what we're doing. Most recently, we had a teacher and an assistant principal visit our sister school just 2 weeks ago. So not only have I gone to visit the school, the principal, the assistant principal, and our art teacher went to go visit, and the art teacher actually taught an art lesson that she taught our students in Connecticut,
really?
In China, to see what the product difference would be. Did they create the same art project versus, you know, it compared to what our students did? And it was interesting because she found that the students in China are much more structured, and their ability to think creatively very quickly, like many of you, was not as accessible to them. It wasn't as easy for them. So that was a very interesting finding that she was able to experience.
What do you think about getting programs like that in Wallingford?
I think that over the course of time, I would like to work with administration, teachers, and parents, and the Board of Education to investigate programming like that. I think, again, going back to the very first question, or one of the first questions about 21st century skills, it's essential that we continue to communicate and connect with other cultures, not only in China, but in other cultures throughout the world. It's very important because our world, again, the United States is so diverse, and we need to be aware not only of the language, but also the cultural differences and similarities. So I would be committed to moving forward and trying to encourage people to investigate that, and then at the comfort level of the district, move forward with actually investigating an actual partnership.
How do you think you could get more programs like that into, like, the Wallingford schools?
I think it takes time. It takes the development of trust amongst the community and the staff and interest. Initially seeing, not within the first few months of my arrival in Wallingford, but throughout the course of maybe the first year, see if there's interest in people wanting to investigate international relationships throughout the district, not just at the elementary, middle school, but also most certainly at the high school level, and looking at community partnerships with local industry to see if there's any interest, or if they might already have connections in different parts of the world that we can then lend ourselves to use as a springboard for future connections. But take it slowly, because you want to make sure that whatever you develop, and this is a lesson for all of you, whatever you decide that you want to do in your life, and any change that you want to make in whatever you decide to do, you need to make sure that you clearly map out how it's going to happen. You don't want to just rush into a change because it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Just like anything you do, you want to make sure that you have a stable foundation.
Mm-hmm. A comment from Amy, one of our viewers. She wants to know, who was your favorite school teacher and why?
My favorite school teacher? Oh, that's a tough one because I had a lot of great school teachers. But I would actually have to say the most influential school teacher on me was actually a social studies teacher I had in high school. She actually lives in Wallingford, she was challenging. In freshman year, we had a quiz. She signed us like three chapters. I'll never forget this. She signed us three chapters to read, and it was the most boring information, I have to say. And I think we found out later she did it on purpose. She wanted us to read this material, and the next day she gave us a quiz, and it was tough. it wasn't just facts. It was making connections with your own life, with making predictions. So it was really something that I had not experienced, and I was really upset. And at the bottom of the quiz, because I knew I didn't do well, I wrote her a note and said that I thought this was unfair, and I went on and on and on and on and on. And I got home that night, and I said to my parents, you're paying good money for this education, and this teacher is doing this, and how could you let that happen? And to make a long story short, we became very good friends, and we still are many, many years after the effect. And she really challenged me to become more of a problem solver than just a person that was going to get the correct answer. And that was so important to me.
What was your, like, best learning experience that you have had, and why?
My best learning experience as an educator probably came from learning that I was able to derive from my students. When I was teaching in Willimantic, I taught a course at Eastern Connecticut State University on middle school education, and one of the courses was on interdisciplinary units, and I know sometimes at middle schools you probably do units where maybe the math teacher coordinates some work with the science teacher or social studies with language arts, and we did a lot of those units when I was teaching 8th grade there. And I asked my students, my 8th graders, to present to my college students what they had learned. And that group of five students taught me so much about the ability to communicate with my college students. They were fantastic. I was so proud of them. I was amazed at their ability to not be nervous. They just took over the class, and they did an incredible job. And each of them have become very, very successful in their own lives. And I guess it was just the awareness that these students, even though they were 8th graders, you could just learn so much from them in terms of their personalities and their ability to do the right thing and present information in such an articulate way.
We have a question from Nick. How important do you believe standardized tests are in the 21st century school systems?
I think standardized tests have their place. I think there's a balance that you do need to assess children to identify where potential areas of weakness are or potential areas for growth are. I think that it cannot become consuming in terms of the school year, that every day or every month the focus is a test such as the CMT in Connecticut or the CAP test at the high school level. However, I think they do give us a good focus in terms of our instruction, and they do give us some of the accountability, as I mentioned. So there needs to be a balance.
Do you think there's going to be the CMTs and other standardized testing are going to end up on computer, being taken on computers?
Actually, they're presently doing some pilots in the state of Connecticut with school districts that have the computer capacity to do so. The problem with that, and I think it has its value, the only thing with the CMT, as you're all aware of, there's the open-ended responses. There's the writing prompt. How do you do that on a computer and get a score? So there's a scoring glitch there in terms of technology, and also the access. How many computer labs does your school have? How many computers do you have in your building? How could you give the whole 8th grade take the test at the same time? So there are some resource issues as well as some just inherent issues with the actual assessment. I certainly wouldn't want the state of Connecticut to make the CMT a pure multiple choice assessment. I don't think that truly gets at what we're trying to assess in our students.
If you're going to design a 21st century school from the ground up, what are the three key features that you would include?
Well, I think the most important feature, no matter if it's a 21st century school or a school that is opening this coming fall, you have to have the best staff that you could hire. It has to have staff that is up to date with the latest practices in education, that cares about students, cares about their involvement in the community, cares about the relationship that they can foster with parents and their colleagues. So staff is number one. I think the actual, the next piece, again, not related to the building, but you have to have a very vibrant curriculum, that the curriculum needs to relate to 21st century skills. It needs to relate to the fact that you're integrating communication skills, problem-solving skills, critical thinking skills, all those things that I keep mentioning. Those need to be evident in your curriculum. They need to be identifiable aspects of all curricular areas. And then lastly, the building does need to be a flexible and technologically advanced resource. It needs to have the ability for expandability. A lot of our schools that we build with the latest technology, and 5 years ago or 10 years ago it was the TV in every classroom. Now it's the smart board in every classroom and the projection system. Well, you need to have it so your building is built in such a way that when the new technology comes out, you know, 2 years from now, you're not having to retrofit everything. You need to be able to step into that mode and move forward. So the building needs to be flexible in its space, needs to be flexible in its design to accommodate the changes for the future.
As you're talking about, like, the computers and such, a lot of viewers want to know about your opinion on internet filters like YouTube, podcasting, and other sites that allow for easy communication between kids. Should that be blocked?
My number one goal that I would say that supersedes everything that I have to do as a superintendent is to protect student safety and provide student safety. So the answer to that would be you have to be very careful, and I think it's our responsibility that some blocking does have to occur, because we all know, unfortunately, the stories that have been in the media many, many times over the course of several years, that not always are the intentions of people on the internet the same as the person that might be using it from a school. Mm-hmm. So we need to be very cautious. I think that there are some safe ways to get around things that in a proactive way and in a way that's not going to violate policy or not put anyone in harm's way. So that would be something that you'd want to continue to investigate. But I do err on the side of caution. Your parents send all of you to us every day, and you're the most precious gift that they have. And you're the most precious thing that they have. And I'm not saying that for any other reason except the fact is I take that very seriously. Mm-hmm. And I do not, and I would not, and I believe any staff member would not want to compromise your safety. Even if it was the most incredibly educationally exciting opportunity for you, we still have that mm-hmm. obligation to your parents. And to you also, mm-hmm. to make sure you are safe.
Yeah.
The president has just finished his 100 days in office, and he had big plans for it. Can you give us an idea of what you're going to do during your first 100 days?
Well, actually, the first 60 of my 100 days are during the summer.
Yeah.
So I think that the first 60 days will be really getting to know a lot of people within the school district, learning the systems, learning the organizational structure for the school district, as well as meeting community members. Mm-hmm. I was thrilled to be invited here today because I want to also, once school starts, be a visible member of the school community, coming to visit classes, coming to school functions. I see that as a very important part of the superintendent's role. There are many things that have to be done, of course, on a day-to-day schedule that require me to be back at central office. However, some of those things can be done after school hours. And that's when I would choose to do them, so that I could be in the school, walking around with the principals, meeting teachers, and engaging classroom instruction. So the first 100 days, I would see it as a combination of things, an opportunity for me to get to know as many people in the community as possible, begin to get used as a data collection period of time, look at what's going on, programs, activities, visit the schools, and then once school starts, really getting to know the most important aspect of this school, which are the students.
There's a comment from another superintendent, John, and he says, we all seem to have events in our lives that turn us in a new position, positive direction. Sometimes they are the things that make us go, aha. What was one of the most memorable experiences for you?
An aha moment. That's a good question. I think that probably my aha moment came and was most vivid when I was a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was in a very diverse school environment, a very economically depressed school environment, where students were dealing with a lot of issues at home. And as much as I loved being a teacher, and I loved my 125 students I had every year, I realized that I was making a great effect. I thought I was having a great effect on their lives, but I felt that that wasn't enough for me. I needed to try to make a greater effect on more students' lives. So, and it came from my students. When I first took a job as assistant principal in Wethersfield, Connecticut, I told my students that I was going for the interview because I was, you know, my students were like my family. And some of them said, oh, we hope you get it. Some of them said, we hope you don't get it. And when I did get it and I told them that I was leaving, I think that only solidified that aha moment, because they said, okay, now you can go out and help other kids like you helped us. And I think that was very important.
Well, the interview's almost over, but what is one question that you think we should have asked you?
Let me I was very impressed with the questions, as I mentioned earlier. One question that you should have asked me. I'm not sure. I really have to say, I'm not sure. I think you hit upon a lot of very important questions. I think
You hit upon so many topics.
You hit upon a lot of topics, and you will know, and the school district will know very quickly that I'm not a person that's short on words or comments. So you've really stumped me, because I'm not left speechless. But even the most important thing is, you know, I'm a Yankee fan.
Yes.
So that was very important. You didn't ask me about, you know, what I'm feeling about any of that, but that's okay. That's for another time.
Do you support the idea of more, like, abstract education, like, instead of the straightforward out of the book and just, like you said earlier, just reading the text, then taking a test?
Well, I think it's a combination, because the fact of the matter is that we have to be, as educators of in a K-12 district, we need to be cognizant, or we need to be aware of what the expectations for all of you will be at college level. Mm-hmm. Some colleges are moving more towards experiential learning, but most colleges are still teaching in a very traditional way of doing, you know, where you, again, have to use a textbook, you have to read. So we need to give you all of the tools. That's our role. You have a toolbox that is given to you in kindergarten, and it's empty. And over the course of 12 years, we have to fill that toolbox with so many different skills and so many different resources that you can access whenever you're put in a situation. So sometimes it will be reading a textbook, reading a social studies book, and being able to pull out facts for a particular reason. Another time it might be being able to go online and doing appropriate research and finding appropriate data for you to use to support an argument. So it's a variety of things that we need to do, because there is a purpose and there still is a need for direct instruction. So teachers still do need to teach you concepts and skills. But again, there's a balance. You want to teach the concept, the skill, and then apply that very quickly.
Okay. What sort of teachers are you looking for to fill in those open positions?
If there were open positions in
yes.
Wallingford or in a school district, I think you want a teacher who knows his or her content area, a teacher who is approachable, a teacher who has definitely demonstrated a love or an appreciation and passion for education as well as students, and their desire to do the best that they can and really challenge themselves. And also, I want teachers who believe that they still need to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe I need to still learn. I have a lot that I still need to learn as an educator. And I think that as long as people come into any position and feel that there's still things for them to learn, not only from their colleagues, their administrative team, but also their students, then I think you've hired an educator who's going to be successful. So it's a lot of different characteristics.
Do you think teachers should accept constructive criticism from their students?
Yes, I do. I believe that everyone should be open to suggestions, open to recommendations. I used to do that when I taught in middle school. Every quarter when I was grading the students, they were given an opportunity to grade me. And they would just write down comments. We would discuss them as a class and make sure that if there were concerns that we reviewed them. But it's important. And I think most teachers are welcome to it. I think most teachers want to do the best for their children that they're entrusted with each year. So I don't think that that's I don't believe there's necessarily a formal way of doing it that has been put in place, but I think a lot of teachers, and you might not even realize it as students, that your teachers are asking for your feedback when they are teaching their lessons, or at the end of the lesson they might say just quickly, well, how did that go, or what did you think? Teachers do that all the time, and you can see that in a lot of classrooms across the districts that I've been in, that's for certain.
Well, we're done with our interview, but what is the one most important takeaway message you'd like our teachers and students to hear?
I think the most important message I want them to hear, and that's why I didn't have a question that you weren't going to ask because I knew that question, was the fact that I look forward to becoming the superintendent in Wallingford starting July 1st. I'm very excited about it. I hope that people are willing to invite me into their classrooms, invite me into the schools to be part of the school. I do know that I have a role, of course, as leader of the district. I do know the responsibilities that go with that. But I also know that there's a responsibility to understand truly what's going on in the classroom, even from the level of the superintendency. So I'm committed to doing the best job I can here. I'm committed to becoming a real team player, and I'm looking forward to that opportunity, and I can't wait to get to know everyone and get started. It's going to be, I believe it's going to be a great experience for everyone.
Okay. Thank you. That's all the time we have for today's show. We'd like to give a big thanks to Dr. Menzo for the interview and everyone who stopped by to listen live or is listening to our podcast on their iPods. Have a great day.
Thank you.